Glorious is some of the fathers. All glories is some of the bodies. All glories to see see. Guru and God, Amanitai Gaur, Bhimanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Vitaraya, Samadhi, Bhakti, Vedanta, Samadhi, Sanamma. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Guru Vani, Pacharane, Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Pushkati Devi, Vitaraya. Om Jamitam Namrasya Jana Jala Sulakaya Sasi Sumanatan Jana Kasmai Sri Gurudaya Nama Sri Jaitanya Nandustam Sapitam Jana Vitale Saya Nupakadama Vedati Sankham Om Sakalpatu Vrasya Kripa Sindhu Vedi Vedi Tarani Pamanigo Vaishnavego Look, Krishna's foot is in the water. That's what I thought. He was playing his flute and his foot was in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Water.
Water. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good. Might be.
Water is water, Mala.
Either it is ocean or just Atman cup. Sarama, you were able to sit. You were able to sit cross-legged there. Huh? What were we reading yesterday at the end? Huh? Because Kamsa had noted that so many of the demons that he sent had been killed by Krishna, some by Balaram, mostly by Krishna. And he had been saving two of the heaviest, worst, most devoted demons who were most devoted to him, named Arista, Sula, and Keshi. He had been saving them for the end. So he called them and he told them that Arista, you go first, and Keshi, you stay nearby, just in case. So they were very, very eager, and they were extremely powerful. Kamsa thought I had sent Putana, but perhaps it was a mistake. She wasn't powerful enough. Arista thought he was extremely powerful. Of course, someone may be extremely powerful, but Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. And he was so huge in the form of a bull, and he began to use his hoofs to break up the land of Vrindavan. He passed, as it said, stool and urine, and Srila Jiva Goswami said when he passed stool it was as big as a mountain. So he was huge, he was powerful, he was fearful. But Krishna wasn't afraid at all. He made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hoofs. Kampayan. He made it tremble. He bellowed harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns. Every now and then, he passed stool in the earth. And all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, in great fear, ran to Krishna, calling out, Govind, Govind, Govind. all went to Krishna. In the Sanskrit word here, te sarve govindam saranam yayu. So they all went to Krishna. This is the specific characteristic of the residents of Vrindavan. They all go to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, they called out. They cried out. Why? For shelter. And they did not know anything but Krishna for their shelter. And Krishna had gone to Govardhan at this time, which really wasn't very far away. But he had gone to Govardhan Hill. And why did he go to Govardhan Hill? Srila Jiva Goswami describes that he went because when he saw Govardhan, he felt so happy. So he went Govardhan to Govardhan to see Giriraj and to feel the happiness that he experienced. And then, despite him being a distance away, when everyone called out to him, Krishna, Krishna, he immediately was present and he calmed them down, saying, don't be afraid. And then he called out to the bull demon. It described also that he put his elbow on the shoulder of one of his friends and said, what is this? You're just some kind of a demon? You want to be killed? Come on. And the demon, because Krishna was, he laughed loudly first. And he was acting so casually that the bull demon became more angry, but his friends became satisfied and they became fearless because Krishna was reassuring them. So Krishna said to them, said to the demon, Gopalai Pashubir Manda. He called them Manda, you fool. And he called them an animal too. Now, one of the reasons he called them a pashu, or an animal, is because he was in the form of a bull, and he was going to kill him, so he didn't want to be known for killing a bull, so he just called them some animal. So he said, go palai pashu bi manda, you fool, trazitai kim asattama, o most Asattama, the most wicked one. Oh fool, why? What is the purpose? For what purpose are you frightening everyone in Braja? Mayi sastrari, sastari. When I am sastari, I am the punisher, dushtanam, of the contaminated, twatvidanam, like you, duratmanam. Like, I am the punisher of contaminated miscreants like you. So he just disparagingly called them three bad names. He called them a duratmanam, a miscreant. He called them a asattama, the most wicked one. And he called him contaminated, dushtanam. So he was critical and nasty to him. Dismissive of him. What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal? Frightening, called him Manda also, you fool. Frightening the coward community. Where is that word Manda? And what does that mean? Describing Manda Samanda Mateo, Manda Abhagya Upadrutaha. Manda Samanda, Kalosman, in Kali Yuga. This is the qualities of people in Kali Yuga. Manda Sumanda, they're foolish and extremely foolish. Matayo, Manda Ubagya. Manda is used so many times when described. And Upadrutaha means everyone's minds. This is the prime quality of Kali Yuga. Everyone's minds are
disturbed.
Why is everyone's mind disturbed? Anyone know?
Computers.
Yes, still everyone's mind was disturbed.
I know, but it's been magnified.
From fear.
Huh?
From fear. Fear, scared, and it's always talking to you, trying to make you scared all the time.
I'm not even going to ask you what it's saying to you. Saying, Keiki, why have you done like this? But it's disturbed because, okay, what is the cause of the peaceful mind?
Goodness.
And what is called the cause of the disturbed mind? Passion and ignorance. So why is everyone so disturbed? Because there's such a predominance of passion and ignorance in Kali Yuga. We're running very fast away from Krishna. We're so busy trying to be happy without Krishna. And therefore, we gain the shelter of the modes of passion, ignorance, and causes us so much trouble. Manda samanda matayo, manda abhagya upadrutara. So, this one was a real rascal and a fool, this Aristasura. He was a friend of Kamsa's. And Krishna was treating him very casually. Having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari, he slapped him. He slapped his arms with his palms. How do you do that? Like this. Further angering Arista with a loud sound. And then he was making loud sounds. The bull was bellowing and he was making louder sounds. So Aristasura became even more angry. And he charged and the Lord casually threw his mighty serpentine arms over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. He was just completely contemptuous. And thus provoked, Aristasura poured the earth, the ground, with one of his hooves, and then with the clouds hovering around this upraised tail, he furiously charged Krishna. And he pointed the tips of his horns straight ahead, and he glared menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes. He wasn't a bull. He was a demon. And Arista and Krishna told him, anyway, I killed calves before. When this Vatsasura came, he was in the shape of a calf, and you're in the shape of a bull. He rushed towards Krishna at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. And with his horns pointed right at Krishna, made it easier for Krishna. He seized Aristasura by the horns and he threw him back 18 steps. It is also said he kicked him 18 times, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Krishna was really showing his vira. He was showing his chivalrous nature here. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up. He was quite embarrassed because he had been thrown as if he was insignificant by Krishna. The bull demon got up and breathing hard and sweating all over his body, he again charged him in a mindless rage. Murchita, krodha. Murchita means he was like unconscious, stupefied. By anger, krodha, by anger. So this is the nature of a demon. Yes, we could say that stupefied by anger, but we could say that he just got thrown back by this little boy who either kicked him 18 times or threw him back 18 steps. And he knew he had killed so many of the other demons previously. But he was very determined. He was very determined. Usually we say determination is a good quality. But obviously it depends on what is directing the determination. So he was very determined, but he was being a determined demon. He was determined to stay in opposition to Krishna, opposed to Krishna. So this was, of course, a bad quality. So, and then when he became angry, there was no intelligence left at all, because with a little intelligence he could have just, even then if he could have just thrown himself down at Krishna's feet and said, listen, if I made a mistake, I'm sorry, I caused so much trouble, please forgive me, I'll just leave now. He could have done something like that. Now I realize that, you know, you're unlimitedly powerful. Because after all, he threw him. But no, he was determined, a determined demon. So he again charged Krishna in a mindless rage, breathing hard, sweating all over his body. As Arista attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns. Again. And he knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth. What is that referring to? He thrashed him as if he was a wet cloth.
Without any anger.
Yeah. But you don't see people thrashing wet cloth so often. You know, kicking it or something. You know how.
What about when the washerman wet it on the.
Yeah, or they. Or they squeeze it, or they kick it, they kick the water out, or they beat it on the rock just to clean it. And actually he purified Arista. The Lord then, listen to this, how he killed him. He does things in such marvelous ways. He does these things with savant flair, foie. What is that, you know? French? Hmm. Bunky? Yeah. And it must be something like it in Urdu, but with just such style.
Style.
Yeah, style, that's what it is. So he thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he took out, yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until the demon lay prostrate. Killed him with his own horn. He was trying to use that horn. Both times he charged Krishna with his horns. And the things that were meant to kill Krishna ended up being his own death. Until he lay prostrate. He vomited blood, profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about. Aristasura thus went painfully to the abode of death. He went to Yamalok. But actually, Srivijiva Goswami describes that he was purified and gained liberation. But that's just a way of saying all his impurities came out. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. And having thus killed the bull demon Arista, who was a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Purport. This verse exemplifies the sublime contrast of spiritual qualities within Sri Krishna. In one four-line verse, we simultaneously learn that the Lord Krishna killed a powerful and wicked demon. Evam kukud menam hatwa. Kukud Minam means the humped hatwa. Thus, having killed the demon with the big hump, stuyamanam, he was praised vijatibi by the brahmanas. Vivesha goshtam sabhalo. So he entered the cowherd village, sabhala, bala means Balaram, with Balaram. Gopinam Nayana Utsav. He who was in a festival for the eyes of the gopis entered the cowherd village. So this verse exemplifies the sublime contrast of spiritual qualities within Sri Krishna. In one four-line verse, we simultaneously learn that the Lord Krishna killed a powerful and wicked demon, that his boyish beauty gave festive pleasure to his young girlfriends. Lord Krishna is as hard as a thunderbolt or as soft as a rose, depending on our attitude toward him. The demon Arista wanted to kill Krishna and all his friends, so the Lord beat him into a wet rag and killed him. The gopis, however, loved Krishna, and thus the Lord boyishly reciprocated their conjugal feelings. Now, let's just hear, before we move on to the next part, this is a very, how to say, it's the most wonderful and chivalrous part of Krishna's Leela, because he kills Aristasura in such a wonderful way, in such a heroic way to protect the residents of Vrindavan. But it is also the beginning of a very, very sad part, because very soon Narada Muni is going to go to Kamsa and tell him beyond a doubt that it is Krishna who was meant to kill him, and that Vasudeva had brought this boy Krishna to exchange him with the girl child of Yasoda Nandamaraj. And Kamsa is going to become furious. And then he's going to call for Akura to bring Krishna, and he's going to make his plan. Which means, anyway, means that Krishna will leave Vrindavan. So, let's just go back. Arista scraped the earth with his hooves. He dug out the embankment of the fields with his horns. He made the cows and women have miscarriages. Krishna became angry at him. He addressed the demon as almost sinful one because he was frightening the cows. And in this way, Krishna suggested that no sin would be incurred by killing this demon bull, though normally killing a bull or a cow is the most heinous sin. Krishna then slapped his arms with his palms, and then he further angered Arista with a loud sound, and then he casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over the shoulder of a friend, and he stood facing the demon. He indicated in this way his contempt for this ignorant demon, because he was nonchalant and casual. And in this way he reassured his friends. Then Arista showed his power by raising and twitching his tail so that it disturbed the clouds in the sky. And the bull's eyes were red with arrogance. And with his glances, he was like scolding Krishna. And Krishna then threw him back 18 steps in the opposite direction from the direction he charged. And then he attacked again. And Krishna forcibly seized the demon by his horns, and he beat him like a piece of wet cloth. So they have by the river, they have those
sins.
Huh?
Stone sins.
Yeah, and then they have this piece of wood that they beat the west wood. But don't they have those wooden things too? Or was that my imagination? Yes, but generally they do that on the rocks.
In the homes we have that.
Yeah. boom, 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 boom. That's what Krishna did. He didn't pick him up and whack him on the ground again and again, but he beat him like you beat him someone with a wooden stick like that. He extracted his left horn and then stuck him with it. Arista underwent great difficulty, and then Yamaraj came to kill him rather than Krishna himself. That's what Vishwanath says. Nevertheless, he immediately attained liberation, and the demigods praised Krishna by showering flowers. Thus, having killed the bull demon Arista, he, who was a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Nayana Utsava. Now, another wonderful thing that comes from this pastime. It's amazing because it simultaneously brings the most wonderful occurrence, and it brings starts the beginning of the end of the saddest occurrence. So the saddest occurrence is, as we mentioned, that it begins Kamsa's plan to call Krishna, to send a Krura to call Krishna for the great Dhanurjagya, call him to Mathura. And the most wonderful thing that it does is raise your hand if you've seen Radhakund and Shyamakund. I've been there with you even one time, long time ago. I remember that. So there's two people who haven't been there yet. They should go. Whoever those two people are, they should see these wonderful places. How many times have you seen? Two. You have to see the third time. When will you go see it again? Radhakund, Shyamakund, and Giri Govardhan. Huh?
Maybe to see it.
Really? How nice. It's
totally up to Krishna.
Did you go last year when you went to and you saw them?
Yes.
What did you think when you saw Govardhan and Radhakund and Shyamakund?
I
bet.
I diverged praying. I said, are we supposed to eat when we're here?
I remember that one.
Yeah. You're supposed to be holding up the hill. It's really? She said, yes, we are. So.
You can eat there. Kiraj doesn't demand austerities in that way. So, after Aristasur had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. Now, this is quite amazing. That powerful sage of godly vision, so he went there, and he has godly vision, and yet, first of all, he talked to King Kamsa, whose idea was to kill Krishna. So his vision and his consciousness were godly, and yet, he spoke to Kamsa. And not only that, Kamsa was able to see him, even though he was so demonic. So here is the purport. The term Devadarshana can be understood in many ways, all of which are consistent with the context and purport of this narration. Deva means God, and Darshana means seeing, or an audience with a great personality. Thus, Devadarshana, a name of Narada Muni, indicates that getting Narada's audience is as good as getting God, since Narada is a pure representative of the Lord. And also that Narada's audience is as good as that of the demigods, who are known as Devas. That there are all these meanings of the term Devadarshana reveals something of the richness of the Srimad Bhagavatam's language. From the Puranas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted 20 verses describing a joking conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna had killed the demon Arista. This conversation, so kindly quoted by the Acharya here, describes the origin of Radhakund and Saimakund, Radha and Krishna's bathing ponds. These verses are as follows. We'll read just the English. The innocent young gopis said, "Oh, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull," because it was right before Krishna Rishtasura attacked, just right at the time of twilight, when just as Krishna was about to start a rasa dance. So they said, "Oh, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull." Alas, even though Aristasura was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow. So you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritrasura. "But how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds?" Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch." With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, "This is the water of the Bhogavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, oh holy places, all of you, please come here." When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and they appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows, "See all the holy places?" But the gopis replied, "We don't see them as you describe." Then those best of holy places joined their palms in supplication. They spoke up, "I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Dirgika. I am the river Sona. I am the river Sindhu. I am the Tamrapani. I am the holy place Pushkara. I am the river Saraswati. And we are the Godavari, the Yamuna, the Rava rivers, and the confluence of rivers, the Prayag. To see our waters." After purifying himself by bathing, after purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant and said, "I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places, whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma." Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows, "I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work." Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Aristasura's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands, and in this way a divine pond manifested in a short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, "Go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with waters from mine." But Srimati Radharani replied, "No, no, no, no. This is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. I will have my countless gopi companions bring the pure water of the Manasaganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own waters and thus make its renown, its fame, unequaled in the entire world." Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. Suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Vrishabhanu, Radharani. Then with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. "O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories. Nor can Lord Shiva, nor can Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavors, can understand them. And thus, he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. He is always anointing your lotus feet with nectarian charu and yavaka and decorating them with ankle bells. And he rejoices and feels most fortunate simply by satisfying the tips of the toes of your lotus feet. On his order, we have immediately come here to live in this most excellent pond, which he created by one stroke of his heel. But only if you now feel satisfied with us and bestow upon us your merciful glance, will the tree of our desire bear fruit. Hearing this prayer spoken by the representative of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, "So kindly tell me your desire." They told her then plainly, "Our lives would be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire." Glancing at her beloved from the corner of her eyes, the daughter of Bhishamanu replied with a smile, "Please come." Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. Thus gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna's Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radhakund with their waters. So even today there's a meeting place underneath Radhakund and Shyamakund, where underneath the boundary between them, where the rivers, where the two kundas mix. Then Lord Hari said, "My dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are." Radha replied, "I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastise the Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me." That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radhakunda, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani, a brilliant flash of lightning filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanse of the three worlds. As a final note, that's the end of the verses, it should be mentioned that Narada Muni, being a great sage, understood that the killing of Aristasura more or less concluded the pastimes of Krishna on Vrindavan. Therefore, Narada, anxious to facilitate the transfer of Krishna's pastimes to Mathura, approached Kamsa and addressed him as follows. Narada told Kamsa, "Yasoda's child was actually a daughter, and Krishna is the son of Devaki. Also, Rama is the son of Rohini. Out of fear, Vasudev entrusted Krishna and Balaram to his friend Nanda Maharaj, and it is these two boys who have killed your men." Kamsa had been led to believe that Krishna was the son of Yasoda, and that Devaki's eighth child had been a daughter. The identity of Devaki's eighth child was extremely important to Kamsa because a prophecy had foretold that her eighth child would kill him. Here Narada informs the king that the eighth child of Devaki was the formidable Krishna, thus implying that the prophecy should be taken very seriously. And having received this information, Kamsa obviously will now do everything in his power to kill Krishna and Balaram. So when Kamsa heard this news, that it was definitely Krishna who was the eighth child of Vasudeva, he became furious, and he lost control of his senses. He picked up a sharp sword, planning to kill Vasudeva. But Narada restrained Kamsa by reminding him that it was the two sons of Vasudeva who had caused his death. Kamsa then had Vasudeva and his wife shackled in iron chains. Kamsa realized that there was no use in killing Vasudeva since it was Vasudeva's sons, Krishna and Balaram, who were to kill him. According to the Acharya, Narada also advised Kamsa that if he killed Vasudeva, the two young boys might flee, and therefore it was better not to kill him. Rather, Narada recommended Kamsa to bring Krishna and Balaram to Kamsa's capital city, Mathura. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that Narada did not act inimically towards the great devotees Vasudeva and Devaki when he revealed this information to Kamsa. In fact, as explained in the 11th canto, Vasudeva was grateful to Narada because he was arranging for Kamsa's death at Krishna's hands, and further arranging for Krishna to come and live in Mathura, where his loving father could associate with him. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, "Go kill Rama and Krishna." The king of the Bhojas next called for his ministers, headed by Mushtika, Chanora, Sala, Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers. The king addressed them as follows: "My dear heroic Chanora and Mushtika, please hear this. Rama and Krishna, the sons of Vasudev, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. When they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding viewing stands and bring all the residents of the city and the outlying districts to see the open competition. Because Kamsa wanted to create a festival atmosphere so that Krishna and Balaram would not be afraid and that they would come. You, elephant keeper, my good man, you should position the elephant Kuvalaya Pita at the entrance to the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies. Commence the bow sacrifice and the Chaturdasi in accordance with the relevant Vedic injunctions. In ritual slaughter, offer the appropriate kinds of animals to the magnanimous Lord Shiva." And having thus commanded his ministers, Kamsa next called for Akura, the most eminent of the Yadus. Kamsa knew the art of securing personal advantage, and thus he took Akura's hand in his own, and he spoke to him as follows: "My dear Akura, most charitable one, please do me a friendly favor out of respect. Amongst the Bhojas and the Vrishnis, there is no one else as kind to us as you. Gentle Akura, you always carry out your duties soberly, and therefore I am depending on you, just as powerful Indra took shelter of Lord Vishnu to achieve his goals. Now, please go to Nanda's village, where the two sons of Vasudeva are living, and without delay, bring them here on this chariot." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the purport, gives the following interesting point. When King Kamsa said, "with this chariot," he pointed with his index finger to a brand new attractive chariot. Kamsa thought that since Akura was innocent by nature, when he saw this fine new vehicle, he would naturally want to drive it and quickly bring the two boys back. But the actual reason Akura went on the new chariot, he thought it was going to, like everyone, someone likes to drive a new car. He thought Akura would take it just for the opportunity to drive the new chariot. But Akura accepted this for a completely different reason. He was thinking that it would have been clearly inappropriate for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mount a chariot that had already been enjoyed by the wicked Kamsa. So Kamsa continued to speak to Akura, who was a devotee. "The demigods who are under the protection of Vishnu have sent these two boys to be my death. Bring them here, and also have Nanda and the other cowherd men come with gifts of tribute. After you bring Krishna and Balaram, I will have them killed by my elephant, who is as powerful as death itself. And if by chance they escape from him, I will have them killed by my wrestlers, who are as strong as lightning. And when these two have been killed, then I will kill Vasudeva. And all their lamenting relatives, the Vrishnis, the Bhojas, and the Darsahas, I will also kill my old father, Ugrasena, who is greedy for my kingdom. And I will kill his brother, Devaka, and all my other enemies as well. Then, my friend, this earth will be free of thorns. He was a peculiar fellow, wasn't he? But this is how the leaders think. I move the opposition. My elder relative, Jarasandha, my dear friend Vidvid, are solid well wishes of mine, as are Sambara, Naraka, and Bana. I will use them to kill off those kings who are allied with the demigods, and then I will rule the earth. Now that you understand my intentions, please go at once and bring Krishna and Balaram to watch the bow sacrifice and see the opulence of the Yadu's capital. Sri Akura said, he was so arrogant that he even spoke his plans right to Akura. Akura said, "O king, you have expertly devised a process to free yourself of misfortune. Still, one should be equal in success and failure, since it is certainly destiny that produces the results of one's work." Because his Kamsa was thinking that he was going to bring Krishna and Balaram here to have them killed, Akura was thinking that Kamsa was bringing Krishna and Balaram here to kill him. So therefore he went ahead with this devilish plan. "An ordinary person," Akura said, "is determined to act on his desires even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore he encounters both happiness and distress. Yet even though such is the case, I will execute your orders." Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura explains that although what Akura said was courteous and encouraging, his hidden meaning was far different. What he really meant was, "Your plan is not fit to execute, yet I will carry it out, since you are the king and I am your subject. In any case, you're about to die." Sukadeva Goswami said, "Having thus instructed Akura, King Kamsa dismissed his ministers and retired to his quarters, and Akura returned home." That's the end of the chapter. Is there anything that's not included? Going back further, Kamsa took up his sword, but not in the presence of Vasudeva. And then Kamsa told Keshi, "You go to Braja and kill Krishna and Balaram." But the word hanyetam says, "Presayan ashahanyetam," also means you should be killed by them. You should go there and be killed by them. Questions or comments?
One time I remember reading a story of Nintasura to a group of devotees, and after the class, one devotee put their hand up
Balaram.
Just understand.
Is it connected with any perception of such a thing on this level?
But you can connect it on a perception with perceptions on this level too. Just imagine that there were cruel, horrible people coming to kill your beloveds, and one great hero came. And they wanted to kill everyone you loved. They were actually doing it. Aristasura was killing all the cows in Vrindavan. That was the first thing he did. And that made Krishna very angry at him. So just imagine if those who you love the most, the people, the cows, they were killing them. These people were killing them. And then this great, great hero stood up and said, "Don't worry, I will take care of you. I will finish these people." And these people were clearly wrong. This Aristasura, what problem did Krishna or the residents of Vrindavan or the cows cause him? So he had come in such a terrible way, just like the imagined enemies, and he was just intent on doing harm. And Krishna, in such a heroic way, simply killed him. But it was to protect the people of Vrindavan who were completely innocent in this regard. So, going back to the scene, if you were emotionally involved and you would have felt so relieved and protected, and rather than thinking the horrible scene a cause of revulsion, you would think it was, what a relief, actually. Of course, you'd want to clean it up quite quickly, but still, it would be the cause of a different kind of happiness, and it would be the cause of an appreciation of Krishna. Still more appreciation of Krishna, because the enemy was powerful. He had caused so much trouble that everyone came running to Krishna, saying, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, help us." So because we do look at it neutrally, we get that kind of reaction. But if we look at it in a associated sense, if we associate ourselves with the scene, then it's not like that. Now, Dhanukasura was also different, because you could say that Dhanukasura didn't do anything wrong. He was just in the forest, minding his own business. Of course he took over the forest, and he wouldn't let anyone eat the tal fruits. But he wasn't attacking like Aristasura was attacking. But yet, he's described as very, very demonic, living there. And he was like the personification of envy, in the sense that this is what it means to be envious, that the tal fruits were falling from the trees, and he, in the shape of a jackass, a donkey, an ass, couldn't eat them, because those aren't the food of a donkey. But he couldn't eat them, but he wouldn't let anyone else eat them. That's envy. So he was so envious, and he was very powerful. And he was just one of there was like almost like a conspiracy on the earth, where, and that's what Kamsa was saying. He had his whole plan to rule the world. The demonic were taking over the world, and they were completely inimical to the Supreme Lord. And that's specifically why the earth Bhumi Devi had called Krishna to come, because she was being taken over by the demonic, and Krishna was the one who had come to stop them. And indeed he did. He foiled the conspiracy, the plan, the plot.
But
demoniac forces have definitely taken over the world thereafter. They continue to take over the world. So it's not like it was a cleanup and a full stop.
Well, at that time there was. He established Maharaj Yudhisthira and it kept things going for quite a while, for say 1,000 years or something like that.
Is that long?
Well, not Maharaj Yudhisthira, but you know, it slowed things down. But it's the time for Kali. But this is the time for Kali Yuga. It's described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that why Kali must come and why Prickett and Raj must leave. Because Kali can't come in the presence, do her mischief, his mischief in the presence of King Prickett. So therefore Krishna had to make a plan that King Prickett, Maharaj Prickett, leave. So therefore the Bhagavatam was spoken in like that. But the reason why Kali Yuga has to come is because more and more sins are committed. So in one sense you could say that Kali causes the sins. In another sense you could say that the sins cause Kali. It's a downward regression as opposed to a downward progression. It's a regressiveness, because as the sins of the world increase, people are more inclined to commit sin. And as people are more inclined to commit sin, then they act more sinfully and the sins increase. And they act more and more irreligiously and they more and more whimsically, more and more challenging the natural way that things should be done.
How can that not be felt as extremely oppressive by those who are striving to act?
What, Kali Yuga?
Yeah, in the way that things are supposed to be done.
But how one deals with a difficult situation is the mark of the person. The difficult situation is out of our control, like so much of life is out of our control. But what part is in our control? So we think, if we think that for me to act properly, first the world has to be rectified, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, because who knows what's going to happen. But the real issue is how we should react to things. So even in Vrindavan, in the ideal situation with Krishna, there were so many difficulties. But the residents of Vrindavan always reacted when Aristasura came, when this happened and when that happened, by calling out Krishna, Krishna, and they took shelter of him only. So that turned bad into the best.
Only knew Krishna.
They only knew Krishna. And even Vasudeva and Devaki, look what happened to them. Because of the force of circumstances, Narada Muni told Kamsa and they were put in prison. I didn't emphasize it, but I read that they didn't resent that, because that meant that soon they would see their darling son Krishna again. So the shackles were accepted as a gift in that sense, because it meant they were coming closer to seeing Krishna.
So Kamsa had one plan, was trying to get Akura to help him with it, and Akura was seeing it as another plan.
Yeah.
And was happy to help, because she was seeing a different outcome.
Yes, exactly.
It's quite amazing that Akura could keep a level head. Kamsa is there revealing what his plan is, that Akura could keep a level perspective.
He was so arrogant, Kamsa. Just imagine. I mean, why would he tell him? First thing is, because the first thing Akura did when he saw Krishna and Balaram, he told him, and Kamsa's plan is to bring you there and kill him. And they just kill you, and they just left. Mm-hmm. But one would think that Kamsa, it was really dumb of him. It was bad politics.
False sense of self-assurance.
Yeah, he really was arrogant, and he trusted Akura was his man. Because out of fear.
Could it imply that they had a very close relationship, to some degree a close relationship?
One said that. Well, Kamsa was really a super controller. He was controlling everyone. He had everyone afraid of him. Huh?
A mover and a shaker.
Well, he was a mover and a shaker and a backbreaker, too. He was powerful, and everyone was afraid of him.
They either left, or they had to be under
him. Or they had to be under him, and Akura was under him.
And he was elderly, right?
I think so, yeah. He was quite old. And he had his family members here. They were still left behind, so if he acted improperly, just kill them all. They had. But it's still quite amazing that he told them. He was so arrogant. And when you're arrogant, you make mistakes. But that didn't turn out to be a mistake that he told the Kura. What turned out to be the mistake is that he was inimical with Krishna.
Well, what else could he have done except to go there?
Who?
Akura. He had no choice. He had to go there.
But no, we're just talking.
He didn't go and kill him.
And kill him and his family.
Whether he tells him or not, doesn't matter.
But then Krishna would run away. If he told that to Krishna or Nanda Maharaj.
How far would he get? You know what I mean?
Not, well, that's what Nanda Maharaj.
But, I mean, Kamsa would be very confident that now he knows what to do, so to speak.
Well, but the reason why he chose to do it this way is to not let on what his actual plan was.
But he revealed his plan.
So maybe one of the acharyas talk about this in more detail, but I haven't. It just appears that he was so confident of his own ability. And which is so interesting, because on one hand he's completely terrified because he knows that Krishna is going to kill him. And yet he's so fearful, but on the other hand he's overconfident. Which is, you could say psychologically, is a compensation for his... What do you think? Why did he tell Akura this?
Probably he was fearful. That is why he wanted to confirm it with Akura, whether what he was doing, because he thought Akura was kind of a minister, kind of. So he might be able to give a better plan, or maybe able to give suggestion.
So he must have trusted him completely.
Otherwise, he wouldn't have sent Akura.
It's true. If he sends anybody else, they would not have been able to bring them. Akura is a relative of theirs.
Uncle.
So, the confidence, you know, they sent.
So he trusted Akura explicitly. Because that means when you're...
Is he related to Akura as well?
Family. Kamsa is related to Krishna also.
Uncle. Vasudev's cousin brother?
Who?
Akura.
I
have the chart of who he was somewhere.
So he was uncle of Krishna, actually?
No. Kamsa was uncle,
no? No, not that way. Vasudev and Akura were cousins, kind of. And that way, Krishna was one or two levels up.
Something like that.
He was old, though, Akura. But it seems like it was that He had everyone fearful. So he knew that Akura would have to listen to him, because he had everyone under control. He was very powerful. Well, there's actually a word that actually said that. I remember now. It said that he was he had mystic powers to say. He knew the art of securing personal advantage. Kamsa knew about Arthashastra, the art of securing personal interest, and kam, sense gratification. But Kamsa knew nothing about dharma and moksha. To satisfy me, Akura, please do this as an act of friendship. I have come to you because amongst my relations, you can execute the task most perfectly. He had confidence in his own power, the crow. This is the last thing that Kamsa says to him. Or Akura says to Kamsa, an ordinary person is determined to act on his desires, even when fate prevents their fulfillment. Therefore, he encourages, counters both happiness and distress. Yet, even though such is the case, I will execute your orders. So he's agreed. And here's the purport of Vishwanath. Akura said, ordinary persons perform activities with expectations that are sometimes fulfilled and sometimes unfulfilled, leading to happiness or distress. I will carry out my orders so that you will be happy. This is the external meaning, but the implied idea is, you are no different from a low animal. In the Sanskrit, it's there. Another meaning is, I will execute the orders of yours since you are indeed fortunate and are going to become joyful. This is the external meaning. The implied idea is, although it is not fitting to execute the orders of you who are about to die, I will do so because you are the king and I am your subject. And another meaning is, though your desires will not be fulfilled, mine will be fulfilled. So I'll carry out your orders. Because his desire was to see Krishna. Go to Vrindavan and see Krishna. Hare Krishna. Good night. Hare Krishna. I don't know, I sent you.